Welcome to This is 65, an interview show featuring inspiring stories from accomplished professionals. I am your host, Erin Akenheil, and this is brought to you by Blackpoint Insurance, where we help Medicare beneficiaries learn about the A, B, C's and D's of Medicare, and we help agents and brokers nationwide learn to launch, grow, and retain their businesses. Let's get this show started. Hello and welcome to This is 65. My name is Erin Akenheil and I own Blackpoint Insurance, where we help Medicare beneficiaries nationwide learn about the A, B, C's and D's of Medicare, and we help agents and brokers learn to launch, grow, and retain their businesses. Through that process, we meet some amazing individuals, authors, entrepreneurs, people in their Encore career, people who have made amazing impact throughout their life that have a message to share. And we love to bring them onto our show and feature them and their businesses to help them grow and bring the good word of all they are doing out to the communities that we serve. So we're so excited about our guest today. The guest today is Tio Carla Spangler. She's an accomplished attorney. She's a writer on so many different topics. Travel, gardening, legal writing, you name it, Tio does it. She has been inspired to be a writer, if you can believe it, by writing in her diary starting at age 6. She's had several published works and is so passionate and creative, and I'm really grateful to be able to share Tio with you guys today. So without further ado, let me welcome Tio from backstage. Welcome, Tio. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Erin. It's nice to be here.
Well, you know, we've been wanting to have you on the show for a while, just because we know that you're bringing a good message out there. You're so, worldly, spending time in different areas of the country. And I just really appreciate you making the time to join us today. So, Tio, tell me a little bit about your background. I know your education and experience is very diverse. Tell us all about yourself.
All right. Well, I started life out in Alaska. I was born and raised in a small town in central Alaska, which was an experience in and of itself. We were allowed to stay home from school whenever it was below 70 below zero.
We got
at least a week, sometimes 10 days every winter when it was below that. So you had to plug the car in. People learned to be self-sufficient, and it was constantly a kind of a struggle for survival. If your pipes froze, they busted, and you couldn't like have heat again until spring. So I decided early on that I wanted to not stay in Delta Junction. A lot of the local kids stayed there, and I had been reading. A lot. You did spend a lot of time indoors because you couldn't even play outdoors. And one of my favorite books was a book of French fairy stories, fairy tales. And I decided as a little girl in Delta Junction that I was going to live in France one day. So my story took me then to California, where I got my degree at Santa Cruz, University of UC Santa Cruz, and then to Berkeley Law School. Where I got my degree and passed the bar, and then immediately took off to work in Europe. I got a job in Lugano, Switzerland, worked there for a while doing trust work. Then I went to Paris and did script writing for an Iranian film company. And before I wended my way up to Alaska again to work for the Attorney General's office there, suing oil companies. But it was a fun time to be in Alaska at that, because the oil companies were just starting to sort of take control of the state with all the money. The oil had been discovered on the North Slope, and billions were rolling in. Alaska went from being the very, very poorest territory state to becoming the richest state in a matter of months. And the same people were in charge, the same Bush pilot who was the governor running the state, and the same, you know, hippies and hunters who were in the legislature. And I was a very young lawyer. I became one of the chief tax attorneys for the state like in the blink of an eye, suing oil companies. So that was very, very exciting. And that was the subject of my first book, which is called Affairs of State. It's written about that time, about that life-changing time in Alaska when people were fighting to keep it from becoming an oil colony. And it was a good fight. And we won at the time. I'm afraid that in the meanwhile, so much money has been put into that Alaska now runs on big oil's clock. But at the time, we felt like we were really fighting for something important. And when that fight was over and that governor left the state, I quit my job and I became a writer. And I would work from time to time as a lawyer in my own personal injury practice, and then write. I wanted to write about what I'd seen, and I wanted to write about, I'd always been a writer my whole life, and that's what I wanted to do. And so over time, I was able to make that happen by visiting France every time that I won a big personal injury case and looking for somewhere that I wanted to stay. So each time I would,
like, I'm going to do one case, I'll make enough, and that'll sustain me to do what I really want to do for a while. I love it.
Well, very, very much so. Very much so. And I finally found the place in France I wanted to live, which was the Basque Country, and managed to find the little house I wanted to buy. And I ultimately stopped the law, quit the law, and moved there to write my novels and raise my child.
Wow, that's amazing. And you know, when I think back like to that first novel, right, when you were fully lawyering, right, and you wrote Affairs of State during that time. Now, was that just completely fact-based? Like, so you just wrote what you saw, or did you use a little poetic license in there?
No, it was a novel. So there were the skeleton. I mean, I don't think anybody writes a novel without expressing something about their life. You can't write meaningfully about experiences without having something similar in your own past. But in most novels, including Affairs of State, the characters are blended. Nobody is just one character. The facts are enhanced or changed to make them work with the plot. So it's a pretty good representation of the optimism that we felt, the fight to save the wilderness that we engaged in. But the characters, I would like to think that nobody reads that book and says, oh, that was me. Everybody is kind of a blend of different personalities plus whatever the book, you know, required for the plot. But it was fun to write, and I felt like I was reliving the whole experience. Writing is fun that way. You kind of go back over your past and pick up all the memories and weave them together in an appealing manner.
Yeah. So Tio, if people wanted to pick up a copy of Affairs of State, is that easy to access? Where would people get that?
It's on Amazon. You can get my Affairs of State on Amazon, and my second book, which is called Brutus, which is also on Amazon. So yeah, head over there if you're interested.
And not only can you order it on Amazon, but you can probably have it in your home that afternoon or something.
Oh, with Amazon, you probably can.
Which is perfect. I love it. So now, you really caught my attention when you talked about, you know, raising your daughter. So were you a single mom and took her to France and raised her there? Or what was your situation? And how did you raise her in both countries? Like, how did you manage all that?
You know, during the various trips that I took there looking for what part of France I wanted to live in, I met my child's father, and we fell in love, and he came back to the States. And then it turned out that we had really completely different dreams. I wanted to live in France. He was a French guy who, like many French people, dreamt of living in the United States. So as it turned out, we divorced. He stayed in the Bay Area, and I lived in France for 20 years, raising my child and writing.
I love it.
And it was hard. I mean, I was away from family, and I didn't have a community. But the Basque community is very protective of children and and women as well. And so she went to a little school that I could see down the mountain from my house is up in the Pyrenees. I need a 4x4 to get there. And so, but sitting on my front porch, on the front picnic table, I could look out with binoculars and see her playing in the play yard in the little school in the town. So it was an interesting place. I wanted to give her the childhood that I would have liked myself. So she grew up speaking different languages and traveling around Europe and definitely a citizen of the world. She was also a dual national, and I became a resident. So I worked for a while there teaching at the University of Bayonne and writing.
Right. Well, I feel like your childhood in Alaska isn't even the typical, you know, American experience of growing up. And then comparatively, this sounds dramatically different. But if you were just to point to something that you would say is the key difference living in Europe versus working in the United States, what do you think is that big differential? Like if you were to point to one or two things that are uniquely different.
It's very interesting living in Europe. We don't realize in the United States how chauvinistic we are. You read the news, it's about us. It's about the United States. And we're also very career driven. We're always thinking of tomorrow and, you know, the implication. In France, you sort of live for the moment, which is what is so appealing to me. If you sit down to have a coffee with your neighbor in the little coffee shop, you sit down to have a coffee with your neighbor. You're there in the moment. You're drinking really strong, really excellent coffee, and you're totally engaged in what you're doing. If you're going out to shop for food, which you do almost every day to the local markets, you're engaged in buying the freshest produce that you can. And then when you're cooking, it matters. Every life moment matters in a way that we've sort of lost. I mean, we buy our drinks to go and we drink our Starbucks on the way to work. And we're also stopping and dropping our child off at preschool. And then in France, it's much more in the moment. And I really appreciated that. So that's one. And the second is you see the world in a different way. I mean, that was more from my perspective than my child's. But what you read about, I mean, the war in Ukraine, for example, is happening in your backyard. You care about that in a different way than just how much money are we going to be spending on it or investing. The refugees are coming into your country. You know, as the politics change in the different countries in the EU, you feel that. You feel the implications of governments going farther to the right. And I mean, in France itself, people are very engaged, actively engaged in a way we used to be in Berkeley in the early 80s, but people aren't so much anymore. You're out in the streets, you're protesting for what you believe in. I mean, the Gilets Jaunes movement there was a movement of just working class people who didn't like what they were seeing. And it's inspirational. Even if you don't agree with their viewpoints, it's inspirational to see people get involved.
So your writing seems to be really diverse. You have a broad range of topics. What are your key themes?
Because of my law background, I like to share my legal experience with people. It's very rewarding to be able to explain legal principles in ways that ordinary people can understand them. And that is one of the things that I do best. I like, in Alaska, we used to always have to explain our tax system to the judges. And we had something called the unitary tax system. It was very complicated. And so the key was breaking it down into pieces that the judge would understand. And I find that most people who consult lawyers don't really understand what the law is. They just say, okay, tell me what to do, and I'll... So with my legal writing, I do try to make things really clear for people, make it so that it's accessible. And I guess that's pretty much what I do across the board. I also do a lot of garden writing. I work at the Botanical Garden as a docent, and I do a lot of, I have a large garden in France. I try to make garden to pass on to people, not just the 1, 2, 3 steps of how to plant potatoes, but the enthusiasm and joy that gardening brings me. Similarly, in travel, I want to evoke the emotions that a place, with which a place attracts me. For example, if I write about the Basque Country, I want people to see those soaring mountains and feel what it's like when you're standing beside the Atlantic with the waves crashing. And it's conveying the authentic experience or conveying the information that's necessary. That moves me the most about writing.
So, Teo, as far as writing about gardening, writing about nature, writing about law, it sounds so diverse and different. How is writing about those three things similar? How can it be similar in that the same person is so good and effective at all different types?
You know, I think that especially as we get older, we realize that each of us have a few things that we feel passionate about. Nobody just has one. Everybody has a few. And maybe they don't seem like they have much in common, but in fact, there is some kind of underlying theme. I really enjoy learning things and passing on what I've learned to others. And for example, in travel, I traveled to France and that's where I learned to garden. I never ever planted when I was in Alaska because it's cold all the time.
And for obvious reasons.
There's permafrost. I mean, the trees only got to be about 15 feet tall where I lived. And I thought, first time I came to California and I saw coastal redwoods, I couldn't believe the trees. And so to me, travel and nature are pretty synonymous. When I travel, I like to input nature. I like to go to places that are wild and beautiful and culturally different. I don't quite know where law fits into it. I mean, I went to law school pretty much because I was offered a full-page scholarship and I wanted to live in Berkeley. But I have to say it's really helped me over the years because I feel very confident that whatever I want to do, I can do.
Right.
I still practice law.
Experiences as well. And it lent you to so many cool experiences as well, like the
it has. Alaska gig. It took me to Switzerland to do some trust law. I think that we can blend and braid our passions together to form an exciting life. And if the minute that one does try to do that, roads open up, doors open up in front of you. I often think about that when I ride the Muni in San Francisco. You get to your stop, and they say, or in the airport, doors are opening. So for a while, I used to carry that around as a little motto, doors are opening. And I think they open when you try to combine passions. If you just have a passion for one thing, you go down a kind of a narrow path. But when you try to expand that, I mean, everything that we love in life is connected. And if you try to expand into 2, 3 different passions, I think your life expands. And that's kind of the secret of life. To me, at this age, somebody asked me, what do you think is the most important thing to you in life? And I would say, following my passion. If I don't do the things that I love, if I don't learn more about what I'm doing, if I don't try to share that with others, my life seems to close. And when I do, my life seems to open.
Yeah. I usually ask my clients, like, what do they like to do in their free time? And, you know, to me, it just seems like you've combined your passions and your work with your free time. It's all one big mesh, you know, where you're just really enjoying life and thriving. Is that, do I have it right? Is that how it is? Or do you find that you shut it off and do something else?
I feel extremely lucky because I have been able to make a living from doing things that are fun, that I would do whether I were paid or not. I love to write. And writing for online. I also do quite a bit of online writing for different sites. I write for Hunker. I write for Legal Beagle. I write for eHow. I write for Gardening Know How. And it's fun. I love to write about my own gardening experiences, my travel experiences, and even my legal experiences. And so to be able to build a life based around the things that you like doing means that you're having fun all the time.
I love it.
What I tell my daughter. Do something you love because you're going to be spending a lot of time doing it. And if you can actually make it something fun, you are leading a fun life.
Right. You know, I was curious as we were just talking there, and I see you've been published all over the place. You've written books. We can order them on Amazon. But what about all of your travel writing? Where would we find that?
Well, you could you can look up T.O. Spengler online, and you will just get a lot of articles that I've written. I write for Fairmont Hotels. When I was first over in France, I published a blog called Living on La Rune, which is the name of the mountain that I live on, which has a lot of my experiences kind of grouped together in that website, livingonlarune.com. And I've worked for, San Francisco Chronicle as a travel writer. They're just scattered around. I haven't compiled them in any way, shape, or form. They're just floating out there.
Wonderful. Well, next goal, right? So tell me, too, a little bit about your potential client. Like, who's your ideal client, and how would they come to you to work with you as a writer or as an attorney? What's their best way to contact you?
You know, like my career is sort of multifaceted. My clients are also very interesting. I have had people reach out to me to do anything that they need written, that they want to catch attention with, and to have an emotional base in. I have written a number of habeas corpus petitions, for example, trying to get people out of federal custody, and also pardon or leniency petitions. So people will find me on LinkedIn and just say, okay, I need something that really captures the authenticity of the emotions that I'm feeling here. And that's my ideal client. If you want something that is heartfelt, well-written, and effective in touching the hearts of whoever is reading it, that's what I do. I don't take on clients for kind of dry cut and dry issues like, income tax appeals or anything like that. My ideal client is going to have some interesting project that they really want to have an emotional basis from, because my writing is emotional. I mean, words can carry emotions. You don't have to make them soggy if you're authentic in using words. You could touch people in a way that just simple intellectual writing can't do. And, you know, I've done marketing work for different firms who are interested in that sort of writing. It has to be heartfelt and authentic. And if it is, you know, I'm willing to work with them.
You're their gal. So Tia, I know you're on LinkedIn, but what's the best way for people to reach you?
You know, I encourage potential people who would like to work with me to contact me at my email, which is tospengler@gmail.com. And you write to me and I'll get back to you.
That's wonderful, Tio. Thanks for being so responsive. And thanks so much for being on the show today. I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you as we wrap things up, I mean, you talked about your daughter and how you advised her to find something that she loves, right? Because you're going to be doing it a lot And I think that's really good advice for everyone out there, right? Find your passion, find your combined passions, enjoy yourself and make that part of a full, rich life. And so I think that's really good advice. But I always like to pause, and you've obviously given some advice already, but if you were to look back, you know, think of that young woman who traveled from Alaska to Berkeley, got herself in California on her full ride scholarship, and you were looking back and talking to her and having a conversation with her right now, what do you think you would say? What advice would you give? What path would you put her on?
You know, when I first moved to France, I wanted to buy a house, a little house in this area, Basque Country. And people told me a little bergerie, which is a sheep herder's cottage. I didn't want one of these big Basque echeas because they have like 16 bedrooms. I wanted a little house in the mountains. And everybody told me, c'est difficile. It's difficult. C'est très difficile. And my response at that time was, difficile mais pas impossible. It's difficult, but not impossible. And I have found, and I would tell my younger self, nothing is really impossible. There are challenges. You may have to fight, but go ahead and fight because it's not impossible. Whatever you dream, whatever is in your heart, whatever you really want to do and accomplish, it's possible. Find a way. Don't let the first blockades stop you.
Tia, you are incredible. So inspirational. I feel pretty pumped right now. I'm going to go figure out all my goals and get cracking because just talking to you really makes me feel good. And really, I think is great for all of our listeners to be thinking about, what do you want to do? How do you make a difference? What's your impact? Because everything's possible. Go for it and find things that you love and feel passionate about. So Tia, you have been such an inspiration. I'm so grateful to have you on the show today. I just want to remind everybody to contact Tio directly. You can go to T-O-T-E-O Spangler, S-P-E-N-G-L-E-R @gmail.com. She's extremely responsive, amazing, and just get to know her like I've gotten to today and enjoy her. So thank you so much, Tia, for joining and appreciate you being on today. Take care. Thank you for listening to This is 65. Please subscribe to the Blackpoint Insurance YouTube channel and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And you can follow me, Erin Akenheil, on LinkedIn and Facebook. See you next time.